Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Afternoon show with Christian Arcan and Andy Hart starts now on WEEI.
Gerard Mayo asked about the Rams and how different they are from 6 years ago. I think that's sort of an interesting question, watching the evolution of this Rams team that did win a Super Bowl with Matthew Stafford. And now here they are, struggling in that division. I'd say they're, you know, in the middle of that division. I wouldn't consider them the worst team. But actually, these days with Arizona, how they're playing, Seattle, I feel like he's kind of fallen off. That division's kind of weird anyway. Everybody's kind of right there in the middle. It's not, no one's really separating. And some of the teams you weren't expecting to get some wins and catch up there are doing that now. And the Rams have sort of found themselves in the middle of all that, dealing with tons of injuries that's decimated their offense and made things hard for Stafford. But they're hanging around, and I wouldn't be surprised if they're right there in the playoff picture as a wild card team and maybe even winning that division. It's not like the Niners or any team is running away with it. So that's a possibility.
Yeah, I think the Rams are better than people give them credit for. They look at last week's game, which was not good.
Yep.
And they look at their record and they're like, oh, that's disappointing. Sean McVay, Matthew Stafford, they should be better. They don't really realize, well, Puka Nacua missed time. Cooper Kupp missed time. They've had injuries on the offensive line. I mean, I keep raving about the defensive front. I'm glad Alex Van Pelt backed me up on that, raving about. They're a different team now, but they're also doing it in a different way. Suddenly they're drafting. Suddenly, they're like Jared Verse looks really good.
They traded all their draft picks for years and years and years. Didn't have any draft picks, and now they're killing it.
They get Puka Nacua and develop him. Like, I think they're doing a really good job draft wise. The one problem is, I think Stafford's going to age out, and then it's now they're in the
back
whole
into
group.
The QB
you
got to
get find the QB. And McVay has talked about retirement at various points along the way here. I think
he talked about retirement like two years ago, didn't
and
he?
I think he got married. I think now they've had a kid. So, and he's still the third youngest coach. He's like 1 year older than Gerard Mayo, who's a young coach.
Wow.
And McVay's been coaching for like 8 years.
Yeah.
He's been to two Super Bowls. He's had multiple Super Bowl quarterbacks. He's lived an entire NFL career before he's 40 years old. But no, I think the Rams, I don't want to tip my pick. We did the preview show in Six Rings.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Rams are going to blow them out.
Yeah.
I think it's a blowout.
Okay.
I went 30-13.
What in particular do you
everything.
Think? Really, the whole matchup?
Like last
like
week, sneaky in that game, Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp combined for like 15 catches. I think they're getting the core of their offense back, which is those two guys in the passing games. I think Kyren Williams is an underrated running back. His yards per carry is down, but he scores touchdowns every time he takes the field, it feels like. He's a like defensively.
He didn't have one last week, but yeah.
Defensively, Fisk and Verse and those other guys, I think are going to this whole, oh, the Patriots have the same offensive line for the second week in a row. Everything's coming together perfectly. I think they're going to get embarrassed potentially by this front that's aggressive and gets after the quarterback. Drake May, you note it all the time. He still makes mistakes.
He does.
And you make mistakes. Now you're chasing a score. Maybe Stafford goes right down the field. If you start chasing, mistakes are even more likely with guys like Verse coming. I have concerns about this game being a reality check for the Cocos of the world that think they're going to go 6-1 and then next seven and make the playoffs.
Yeah, and they have tough games coming up, too. I think this will be a tough game for them, and I do think the Rams are better than they've looked so far, but they also make a lot of mistakes themselves.
Sure.
They're a team that is shown on the O-line and in other places that they, even with talent, and listen, the Bears have more talent than the Patriots. Like, that's a much more talented roster, I would say. It doesn't always come down to that, although I do think in this case, the coaching advantage is going to be right on display. Eberflus, you know, the Salah's replacement, the interim guy who looks like every guy from Gloucester, whatever his name is, I forget, but the guy in the Jets.
Ulbrich.
And, yeah, Ulbrich, thank you. And Zach Taylor. You know, those are three coaches who I still probably would give them the nod over Gerard Mayo just because he's so new at this and doesn't really have a scheme to speak of. It's kind of all vibes and motivation and things like that. But McVay, you know, sometimes that coaching advantage, I think, is enough to tip the scales. And in this case, I mean, the talent's already tipping it towards L.A. I think that puts it over the edge. So I kind of agree with you. I don't know if it's going to be a blowout because I do still think the Rams have issues. But I don't see many paths to victory here for the Patriots. I'll agree with you there.
Well, in the Patriots, they don't score points. They just don't. Yeah. Last week was a dominating win, right?
Yeah, 19 points.
Yeah. Is that dominating now? I mean, and it's okay if that's who you are for now, and they keep talking about that identity and who they are and run the ball.
We don't score points.
Right. Like, you're right. I think they're right. This is their identity.
Yep.
They probably have to win games by giving up fewer than 20 points. I think
the Patriots are averaging 16 points a game. That's worse than every team in the league except the Giants, who are averaging 15.6. It's worse than the Dolphins, the Browns, the Panthers, the Titans, the Jets, Raiders, Bears, Cowboys, everybody. It's the 31st out of 32.
Yeah, that's not good.
And that's with May playing a significant amount of games now. When he's out there playing, they're not scoring a ton more points than that. Like, he hasn't dragged the average up that much.
No.
You know? So, I mean, that just goes to show, even though he looks good, the entirety of the product that you're getting right now is still a very low-output offense that is not giving you anything. I mean, that's the long and short of it.
And they were excited, and I don't want to mock them, but I think in three games, they were, what, 8 of 9 in the red zone? And they were like, yeah, that's one of the best. Hey, you only got in the red zone 3 times each game, on average. That's not great, because that means even if you nail it every time, you only got 21 points.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you want to... I'd like to see this team evolve to a team that scores mid-20s with regularity. Like, I don't have visions of 30-plus points, roll out of bed, up and down the field, but I don't have a ton of faith that they can get to 28 points right now. That just doesn't feel like who they are because, A, they don't always finish.
It should be another realistic goal for the season, score 28 points in one game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If you do that, I'll be feeling better about them.
Because I feel like they undercut themselves with either a turnover or a drive stalling mistake, penalty, something. And I think it would be, that is a good goal. Score 28 points.
Yeah.
Because also with this defense still playing relatively well, maybe getting Christian Barmore back in the coming weeks, maybe 28 points is enough to win a game, shouldn't
it? Yeah, it certainly could be. Their season high so far this year is the 25 they put up against the Jets. After that, it was 21 in the loss to the Texans and 20 in the loss to the Seahawks. And everything else is less than that. So there you go. I mean, cracking 20 is kind of a chore for this team sometimes.
So the 774 says, thanks for all the extra money, Andy. Pats will win. So they're going to bet against me. That's
okay.
Fine.
Fade Hart. #FadeHart.
His follow-up is, the Rams are a turnover machine and very undisciplined.
They are. I agree with him.
Wait,
I mean,
but you misspelled Patriots.
The Patriots are too. Yeah, it's a good point.
That's the Patriots. Mm-hmm. Their running back had to be benched. Their star running back had to be benched because he fumbled every frickin' game. Although I'm still winning that bet.
You are still winning that bet,
yes. Put on the ground since. And their rookie quarterback, who I love more than anybody, turns the ball over.
He does.
And puts the ball in danger. So, okay, you think the Rams are going to out-turnover and out-mistake the Patriots? If that happens, I think the Patriots have a chance to win. I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think it is either. 617-779-7937. When we return, we will be joined by Tom Giles. Tommy Kern and Tom Giles are flipping the script today. We'll be talking with Kern at 4:30. Tom Giles, NBC Sports Boston, Celtics pre- and post-game show, will join us at 3:30. And one of his comrades over there at NBC Sports Boston, Mr. Eddie House, raising some red flags about the Celtics. And if Eddie House is raising a red flag about the Celtics, that means it's a pretty big flag. He said it was a tiny red flag, but the fact that he's waving it tells me it's a big one. It's like, you know, USSR big red flag. So we'll get to that right after Stiz gets you caught up on what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, here's what's trending this hour on WEEI and WEEI.com. Celtics beat the Nets 139-114 in Brooklyn last night. Jason Tatum led the Celtics scoring with 36 points. Celtics will head home to host the Raptors on Saturday night. Tip-off from Causeway Street at 8 p.m. The Bruins in Dallas taking on the Stars tonight. Puck drops at 8 p.m. from the American Airlines Center. Head coach Jim Montgomery told the media earlier today that defenseman Hampus Lindholm will be sidelined for multiple weeks with a lower body injury. Bruins have also called up forward Patrick Brown from Providence. Patriots back on the practice field today, and according to multiple reports, Christian Barmore expected to return to practice. This would mark the first time the defensive lineman has been involved in practice since he was diagnosed with blood clots in July. Patriots will host the Rams on Sunday, kickoff from Gillette Stadium at 1 p.m. And some Thursday night football tonight as the 7-3 Commanders, they're in Philly to take on the 7-2 Eagles. Kickoff at 8:15 from Lincoln Financial Field. You can catch that game right here on WEEI FM. Our Westwood One coverage will begin at 7:30, or you can download the Odyssey app and take us wherever you go. Trending brought to you by Jackson Lumber. Contractors, builders, and homeowners, visit Jackson Lumber in Millwork for all your residential remodeling or commercial building materials and supplies. Jackson Lumber in Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. I'm Stiz. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoon show coming up.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Afternoons with Arkand and Hart on WEEI. On WEEI.
Right now, we're giving up 52 points in the paint per game, and that is bottom third in the league. And then we're only getting 39 points. I know we shoot a lot of threes, so I understand that. And we only get 39 points paint, so we're last with that. So we have to find, you know, some sort of balance. It's okay sometimes to get to the rim, to get an easy bucket, to get a deuce. We don't always have to shoot a three. And this ain't an overreacting the button here, but I'm not going to push a panic button on this. But these are little tiny red flags, and while they're small, you want to stomp them out so they don't become big red flags that could affect you later on in the season, or something that somebody could look at and say, this is how you could attack this team, this is how you could beat this team.
It's Eddie House, NBC Sports Boston. That was after the Hawks game, so he may have changed his tune a little bit, but listen, anytime you hear Eddie House talking about a red flag with the Celtics, even if he calls it a tiny red flag, consider the source here. Eddie House on the Wii team, by the way, him and Scal, they refer to the team like as Wii, as though they're still playing. And Eddie is very positive with the Celtics. I mean, he always has been, and I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that. But when I hear him talk about small red flags, I assume this is like the Olympic opening ceremony in China didn't have a red flag that big. This to me is a problem that he's identifying and speaking about because it's hard to ignore it. And I know that they killed Brooklyn last night, but in the games that they've lost and even in some of the ones that they've won recently, it's been a problem. It's been a problem in the paint. It's been a problem on the boards. It's been something that I'm not exactly sure what the solution is. I think it goes beyond just getting Porzingis back, and Scal said as much yesterday, but it's getting noticed. It's getting noticed by guys who generally don't nitpick stuff like that, like Eddie House, and now he's talking about it on the NBC Sports.
So some of it is philosophical, as he points to. If you're going to shoot 50-something threes a game, you're not going to score a lot of points in the paint. You're not going to be, right? I mean, that's just
exactly
the bulk of your shots are coming from behind the arc. That's who they want to be. Now, I don't love it. I'm with him. And I think sometimes when they go through cold stretches, they have more than enough athletes to take it to the rim. And you don't have to necessarily have a post presence to take it to the rim and score in the paint. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown can go to the rim anytime they want. Jaylen Brown, I love. I actually thought maybe the whole bulking up thing was going to add a different dimension to the post presence to his game, the physicality.
I think it has a little bit.
I think it
has,
too.
Last night, he definitely
I would do it even more.
Around. Yeah.
I love him when he's inside the three-point arc. I really do.
I think you love him no matter where he is.
Well, that's true. But, like, the elbow jumper, love. When he's down low, love it. Like, I think he's just versatile in that way.
Everywhere except the free throw line.
And bringing the ball up. Yeah. There was a possession last night. Did you see it where Ika poked away three separate times
in
the backcourt?
Yes, I did see that.
And I was like, okay, can we give it up? Mm-hmm. Pritchard's over there. Just give him the damn ball and stop it.
Yeah.
This is one of those things people are going to make fun of you for on the radio, and it's hard for me to defend you.
Yeah, that was a tough one. It ended up not making
No, it ended
obviously.
Up being nothing.
But Jaylen Brown in the last half hour, though, has made a little bit of waves on Twitter. I don't know if you saw this.
I did. You retweeted it.
Nike Basketball yesterday, responding to Giannis and his 59-point game, tweeted out, "Nothing childish about him. 59 for the Greek freak."
Wait, what does that mean? Can you explain this to me? I'm a little confused.
So Jaylen Brown called Giannis a child.
Yeah.
And Nike Basketball having his back, I guess, because
okay,
he scored 59 points.
I got it.
Nothing childish about this guy.
Screw you, Nike.
He scored 59 points. Jaylen Brown, about a half hour ago, quote tweeted that and said, "Y'all got weird energy."
I agree. I'm all in with JB here. Because I've never seen a professional athlete maybe do anything as childish as what Giannis did, right? You knew you were being childish when you did it to your damn grandmother.
Absolutely.
It's immature, corny, childish, whatever. Just live with it, walk away, take it, take the L, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Nike is going to use that as a way to rekindle their little feud here.
Yeah,
purposely taking a shot at JB there, which they 100%. Did not have to
but
at
to
all.
Me, they
they already don't like Jaylen Brown, so
but I would do it when I can look like I'm better. I think this makes Nike look childish and idiotic.
He nailed it. That's weird energy.
It is. And I know, I don't know.
Giannis is a Nike guy. I mean, like, he has a Nike shoe, so he's one of their guys, so they're going to stick up for him. Like, I get that.
Yeah, but stick up for him in a way. You can't deny it was childish what he did to JB.
Right.
So stop with that. Find a different way if you want to take a pot shot at JB.
Mm-hmm.
You lose this. You just took the L right there. You just made JB a winner. Absolutely, and do you agree? Because I don't want to just be the JB guy.
No,
won this interaction?
I'd say in this interaction, I don't know. I mean, Jaylen could have ignored it, I guess. Like,
no.
He didn't have to respond to it. But yeah, I'd say that in this case, there's no debate that it was childish. But Giannis also went off for 60 points, so I can see why they're trying to pump his guy up at the expense of another player that they don't really like. Like, I get it. I do think that they seem childish, too.
I would have
just like Giannis.
See, I would have gone with child's play, scored like child's play.
Jaylen Brown's been childish on the internet a few times himself. I mean,
sure.
Let's be honest.
He's not a corporation.
It's
true. I guess now he kind of is a corporation.
Yeah, he kind of is. Yeah.
He has the whole sneaker line and everything. Yep. Maybe he has
Seven Oos and all the other stuff. Yeah, his new shoe.
Juice, isn't it?
Well, it's a seven in the beginning.
I know, but it's pronounced. Doesn't he say it juice?
I prefer Seven Oos.
So you're telling him how to say it.
I'm not telling him anything. I'm just saying that's what it looks like. It looks like Seven Oots.
I'm not a businessman. I'm a businessman.
Thank you, Jay-Z. The Celtics, with their issues in the paint, however, I think can be solved probably just by the law of averages. This isn't a bad rebounding team. This isn't a team that can't get rebounds. They are tough for the most part. I think they are a hard-nosed team when they want to be, and I'm not sure that Porzingis changes that. I don't think that he's some, you know, junkyard dog who's going to come in there and clear everybody out of the paint. Like, that's just not really his game either. It's more a commentary, I think, on what you were just talking about, Andy, which is all the threes. And Eddie talked about it too there in that clip. Like, this is the NBA now. It's sort of a new day. The Celtics are at the forefront of this new way of playing, and this, it's not even really that new, if we're being honest.
Nope.
Here, but they're at the forefront of it right now. They're the poster children for the bombing threes thing, which, you know, a lot of basketball purists don't like. But
like me.
Like you and like a lot of other people. A lot of people don't like this. They didn't really have much of a problem when Golden State was doing it for whatever reason, but now the Celtics are doing it and people are all the crybaby about it. But either way, I think that in general, this is something that they're out ahead of, and it's going more in that direction than I think it's going back into the paint, you know, right? Like, I think this is, still want to be on this side of it.
No, I'm that's modern basketball. Yeah. They're good enough at it. Now, I don't think they're Golden State. I think Golden State had two shooters better anything than they had.
Agreed.
So, like, it was more natural for them, in my opinion.
They have more shooters than Golden State had.
More good shooters. They had two great shooters.
Right.
I will say it's a smaller sample size. It's early in the season. One thing in my mind that would change this number a little bit, higher percentage lobs to Cada. I've seen a lot of lobs to Cada that end up not being points.
Yeah.
If those had gone down as dunks, you know, I can think of probably five or six of those in my head. Maybe that changes the numbers just a little bit. But other than that, finish a little bit better and take it to the, I'm with him. I would like to see them take it to the rim more. I don't think their head coach wants to see them take it to the rim more. So who are they going to listen to, us or their head coach?
I think he'll probably listen to the head coach, I would imagine. 617-779-7937. We are joined now on the hotline by NBC Sports Boston's Tom Giles. You can catch him on pre- and post-game on Celtics games, as well as various other programs on the network. Mr. Giles, how are we doing, sir?
What's up, fellas? How we doing?
What's going on? How you feeling with the Celtics now, bouncing back on the second night of a back-to-back after an ugly loss to the Atlanta Hawks? Was that a get-right game last night, or are there still some lingering issues, do you think, with this team?
There was definitely elements of a get-right game. Obviously, the first quarter, you don't love how they fell behind by 13 once again, but the fact that they came out in the third quarter and just totally dominated, you know, 10 assists, zero turnovers, took care of the ball, and then followed that up in the fourth quarter. You have to feel encouraged about what you saw. But, you know, for anyone out there that really was hoping that they were going to make a run in the NBA Cup, I'd say the odds are quite stacked against them after what they did on Tuesday.
What about those of us that don't give a rat's ass about the NBA Cup?
Yeah, I know. That's probably a growing audience, too, after they laid an egg against Atlanta. So, Andy, I guess you just keep marching on, man.
Okay, so I got to ask you the question about, we were just touching on it a little bit from the offensive end. Your guy, Eddie House, bringing up the red flag of points in the paint. I think our bigger issue, if we're going to look in the paint, is rebounding and the issues they've had rebounding. What do you think is the root of those issues? Is it as simple as, I don't know, you don't have Porzingis? Should Tillman be playing more? What is your level of concern with the issues with rebounding, and how do you think it gets fixed?
I think the rebounding, they're related, is part of it, right? So I think some of the offensive rebounding is just leading to more points in the paint,
yep,
tips at the rim, whatever they may be. It felt like last night, there were a lot of team rebounds. So Cada only had, I think, one rebound, and he was your starting big last night because you saw everyone else kind of crash the glass. So it seemed like that was a point of emphasis to me last night, was to just rebound the ball better. And they obviously did that, and they also did a better job of protecting the rim and cutting down on the points in the paint. So the rebound seems like that would be more manageable at this point. Obviously, if you have Al Horford out there and Kristaps Porzingis, not necessarily at the same time, that's going to help things. But, you know, I think it was just kind of you have to focus on those things, mostly the rebounding, and that's going to pay dividends on the other stuff.
Giles, who do you think the third best player on the team has been so far?
I'd have to go with Derek White. I think that when you factor in his defense, he's averaging like 20 points per game. I'd have to go with Derek White.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think that in general, his three-point shooting and his defense this year seems to have gone up to another level. Like, I'm starting to consider him among the all-time defensive guards, like in the league, you know, like the Joe Dumars of the world and the Jordans and, you know, guys like that. The way that he's played defense these last 2 years, I think he's separating himself. Does it seem that way to you too?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll also look at just what he does in the fourth quarter. It feels like he's always making the right play in the fourth quarter. And for the most part, you also get that from Jrue Holiday, but he's been phenomenal. And then it's kind of weird when he asked that question, it was almost like I was wondering, do you want me to throw Peyton Pritchard in this conversation?
I was waiting.
Because he's been phenomenal as well. And I think that he's great in the role they have him in, coming off the bench, providing scoring where they need him to. But, you know, I still have to go with Derek White and just what a great job he's done since the start of the season. We were even discussing last night, you know, should he be an all-star? And I think you definitely have to give that heavy consideration. You know, he's good enough to be on Team USA, albeit almost as like, you know, an alternate guy who's called in late. But, he seems to me like he would be the third all-star for the Celtics.
Do you have any concerns? And it's a weird question to ask because he's had two very good games, Jaylen Brown. But I think you guys were the ones that reported, you were talking about it in one of the in-game hits, that this wasn't an acute injury. It developed in camp. And JB has said it's something he's going to have to manage this season in all likelihood. Do you have concerns about this hip thing?
I don't, because they played him on the second night of a back-to-back last night. I think that if you have any concerns about that, that, you know, the training staff, medical team is going to, you know, hold Jaylen Brown out if they think that that really does need to be managed in this situation. Because they know it's all about playing in the spring. So I think the whole team, the whole organization knows that. There's no point in risking a November 13th game, you know, second half of back-to-back at Brooklyn if it's any risk at all, because it's about playing in the spring. You know, the same goes with Jason Tatum and wondering if he was going to play after he maybe tweaked his ankle and he goes out there and plays 30-plus minutes. So the fact that all those guys played and played as many minutes as they did, I got to believe that they're looking at him saying these guys are good to go and they can give you the minutes.
We're talking with Tom Giles, NBC Sports Boston. Giles, I remember talking with you at Big Night Boston on opening night, and we were discussing the other teams in the Eastern Conference who may challenge the Celtics here. I don't think any of us had an undefeated 13-0 Cleveland Cavaliers on our bingo card. Are you surprised that a team that didn't really do that much in the offseason, other than extend some of their own players, they didn't make a lot of big trades or free agent signings, are you surprised to see the success that they're having and the relative lack of success with teams like Philly and Milwaukee?
Absolutely. Who couldn't be? Like, how could you not be surprised that I think particularly what's going on with Philadelphia, Milwaukee, even the Knicks have, you know, struggled. So all three of those teams, I think, are the bigger surprise. But Cleveland's played well. And I think if you look at their schedule, I know that they beat the Warriors pretty good. And a lot of people look at that and say that was their best win. But that almost felt like, to me, the Warriors beating the Celtics and then their next games against Cleveland, that Golden State was just fully invested in winning in Boston, and maybe he got him in a good spot when Cleveland beat them in Cleveland a couple nights later. But, you know, to go into Madison Square Garden early in the year, that's a good win for Cleveland. And they've got a really solid starting five, and they've got a superstar who's not afraid of the moment, and Donovan Mitchell, and in size as well with Mobley and Jared Allen, that is, you know, giving teams some fits. So right now, I don't see how you could put anyone else above them as the number two team in the Eastern Conference.
How do you think they match up with Boston, Cleveland? I know they played them in the playoffs last year. Mitchell got hurt, and it was Mobley or Allen. One of them wasn't playing, I don't think. So when they're at full strength and playing like they are right now, what sort of matchup problems do you think they present for a team like the Celtics?
Well, you could be looking at them in their rim protection. Also, I would assume they'll be pretty good on the high pick and roll, because Mobley is as agile as he is with his legs. So that's something that you'd be looking at. But I still believe that if the Celtics are playing their best basketball, that they should be able to beat Cleveland. But at this point, you know, the Cavaliers are that team that you're talking about when you're talking about a team that could potentially give them the greatest fight.
Giles, you're around this team a lot. You break down every game, and I, from afar, thought they would be more dialed in, I think, to start the year, more desirous of making history and sort of showing something in the totality of this season. I don't think they've been as locked in as I expected. Have you been disappointed with the start to the season? I know that's high-class problems to say three losses is disappointing, but, you know, even that Warriors loss at home that I think everybody thought they had circled and all that Olympic motivation, have you been disappointed at all with the start to the year?
No, I haven't. There was definitely had to be a moment there after the first few games where you're thinking, my God, how many games could this team actually win? Like, could they sniff 70 wins? So there has been kind of that little bit of, well, it is the NBA. There's going to be nights where you don't play well and anybody can get anybody, and that's just going to happen throughout the season. So I don't think that you're going to see, you know, 70 plus wins. The way I kind of felt out of the gate, I thought, you go back to opening night, and I talked to you guys before that game when they played the Knicks, they looked absolutely unbeatable. And, you know, I don't know if Washington was the next game. Their first few games out of the gate, though, they looked so dominant that you thought that they could be kind of a historic team as far as from a wins perspective. So that maybe gets dialed back just a little bit, because you do understand that there's going to be bumps and bruises along the way. But the other thing, too, is that, you know, they're still not fully healthy. You know, as many times as we talk about them, they didn't have Jaylen Brown against the Warriors or Kristaps Porzingis. And when they do get a full roster out there on the floor, I can't be disappointed with being 9-3 out of the chute.
Yep, certainly can't be. That's the voice of Tom Giles. You can catch him on NBC Sports Boston, Celtics pre- and post-game, other shows on the network as well. Giles, thanks so much for the time today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate it.
All right. That is Tom Giles joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. Eduardo Perez, MLB Network, had a lot to say yesterday about Juan Soto and the Boston Red Sox. We'll get to that next.
Now, more of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
It's Eduardo Perez, MLB Network, and that was on MLB Network Radio. As I pull this up here right now, MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM.
Talking Sounds about like our the, show's name.
It does sound like that, doesn't it? Hello, this is MLB
Network Radio.
MLB Radio. MLB Radio Show. Perez talking about the fit in Boston, references the Dominican community here, which is a big community in Boston. I go to a barbershop right here in Austin, all Dominican dudes, and we just talk baseball the whole time.
Dominicans cut the best hair. I've said it all my life.
They really, really do. I don't mean to make cast aspersions or anything. I don't think it's not, it's if you're, it's a compliment, it's okay, right?
It's not racist if it's a compliment.
I don't think it's racist at all.
It's just a fact.
This place, they do a great job.
They do. They really do.
This place that I go to, and we just talk baseball the entire time. And it's great. And anyway, there is a big Dominican community in Boston is the point I'm trying to make here. There's also a pretty large Dominican community in New York City, which is where he's playing right now and where two other teams are trying to woo him back there. Anyways, there's also this that Perez said. He says, I think the Red Sox have to do their due diligence of finding out. Soto comes to Boston. What are the benefits besides the on-base percentage and his ability and opportunity to win? And, oh, by the way, let's show him what the park configuration numbers were for 81 games at Fenway. This year, Soto more than ever pulled the baseball, where in the past he used to drive the ball more to left field.
Obviously.
I feel like that doesn't really help the Red Sox either, because Yankee Stadium has the shortest right field porch in the history of the world. So.
But I think that's what he was doing intentionally, and maybe may go back to a more natural style of hitting going the other way at Fenway Park.
Maybe.
I think you could sell him on that. The whole Dominican thing, the Dominican community plus $600 million will probably lure him here.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I feel like it. We were talking about it yesterday. If they're all equal, what puts you over the top? Sure. But are you going to be $125 million short and be like, but we got a great Dominican? The barbers? Oh, you're going to – the barbers are tremendous. Stiz said they're the best barbers in the world. I just don't – and they don't even – so he brings up Devers luring him.
Mm-hmm.
I almost – which is fine. Not that he can't. Wouldn't Ortiz be the guy?
Yeah, like, except he's not playing on the team.
No, but he's a legend.
He is a legend. That's
like,
true.
Tell him what it's going to be like to be a Dominican baseball player here, mm-hmm. to win the chance. Like, don't get caught up in what they've been the last couple of years. Look at what it could be with you here. I lived it. I lived it as a left-handed Dominican baseball. It was the greatest time of my life. We're, you know, winning world championships. We're in the playoffs. Fenway Park's electric. Like, I feel like that's the guy. What's Devers going to say?
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, we've kind of sucked the last 3 or 4 years, but it was a while there we were decent.
That's the worst impression of Rafael Devers I've ever heard, by the way.
Not really an impression, is more of just an awkward voice.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. It's probably better we don't try and do impressions.
Yeah, I don't really do impressions. Anyway. But he sounded like you and Fitzy.
That's right. He sounded like Elmer Fudd right there.
Because I just, doing it, but yeah. I don't really buy into this. You know I want to embrace every one of these things.
I know.
Anything that's a story that's telling me why the Red Sox could or might sign Soto, I want to embrace. This one I find difficult to really take seriously.
Doesn't this sound like, well, we're just reaching for reasons to try and include the Red Sox in this? Well, there's a nice Dominican population, which is certainly not only in Boston. And also, if he wants to go back to hitting the ball to the opposite field, well, you could do that at Fenway Park. But, you know, if you want to keep hitting home runs and pulling them over that little right field porch, you could do that at Yankee Stadium pretty easily.
Yeah.
Like that, I feel like neither one of those things pushes the Red Sox ahead of the New York teams.
No.
You know, and not to mention the fact that those two teams, I still think, are going to be much, much more willing to spend that kind of money because they've done it recently. And they understand what it takes, and they understand that, you know, baseball players are expensive. Yeah, John Henry, and they know that, and they pay for them anyway. The Red Sox, it's like, yeah, baseball players are expensive, so we're not going to get them. Like, that's kind of the philosophy. That's sort of what we've been getting for the last 2 or 3 years, as opposed to these other teams where, and maybe the bill's going to come due for them at some point, but the fact that they're in these talks right now, they know what it takes. They know what it takes to land a Soto, and they're going to go out and do it. I don't know what the Red Sox do.
We don't know if they're, I just think if the Red Sox do, it's like I said yesterday with Jen McCaffrey's story about their recent history. No, I don't really think it's about recent history. I think it's about the present check. Soto even said it. I thought he was like amazingly honest at his locker where he had that comment, we're going to listen to hear what everyone's got.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that to me was just money. What do you got? What do you got for me? Show me the money and then we'll narrow it down from there. I don't think when he said we're going to listen to what everyone's got, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Perez is way ahead of the curve here. Maybe he meant, so he's going to ask each of these six teams that have meetings, whatever it was, six or eight. You know, so how's the Dominican community? What are the restaurants like? How many stars? Like, what do you got in terms of money? And then secondary to that, I would think some baseball. Like he wants to know,
right,
what kind of team is going to be around me?
Were you a playoff team last year?
I just went to the World Series.
Exactly.
I don't want to have $600 million in my bank, but also be in last place.
And stuck out like Mike Trout in Anaheim with making all this money and putting up numbers and never playing beyond October. Yeah.
That's where I think Devers could come in.
Mm-hmm.
You go, well, we already got Devers. You know him. He's one of the best hitters in baseball, blah, blah, blah. You sell him on that. Duran, we got four young studs coming up. We're actually planning on getting another bat in free agency, blah, blah, blah. But I still think the first and foremost is how many years, how many dollars? 14 for 35? Okay, we're talking. 14 for 37? Whatever the number's going to be, we're talking. That's what's going to start, not Dominican restaurants in Boston. No disrespect to the Dominican restaurants in Boston. I'm sure they're great.
Yeah, no, I'm sure they are too. And I know the barbershops are. So, you know, there you go. But yeah, as far as Soto's concerned, there's some play like in there's nine position players right now projected to at least get $50 million by ESPN's Kylie McDaniel. So we might be talking about otherworldly numbers here. You know, like we might be talking about other if this is sort of to be believed, and this is just one person's projection, but there are projections for these free agents that are expected to get up into crazy number, $47 million, 13 years, $611 million is $47 million for Juan Soto, AAV.
Jesus.
$47 million. Like, doesn't that, hearing that right now, if John Henry's driving around, he probably drove off the road. You know, like this, that's what I'm talking about. Like, you hear these numbers and you see these things, and I'm back to the pre-John Henry Duquette days in my mind when I knew there's no way they were going to go up to that, and it wasn't like that kind of money, but you know what I mean? The $47 million of 1998, whatever that was, you know, they were paying A-Rod in Texas, like stuff like that. You go back and start thinking about that, and in those days, you were like, of course the Red Sox aren't going to be in on that. They'll never do that. They'll never go those lengths. I think ownership at this point has shown us that despite their very weak insistence that they're still very much in it and going full throttle and care about winning and all that other stuff, and that this is going to be a different offseason and whatever, they've shown what they think about this team. They show where the priority is. They don't prioritize the Red Sox, certainly not to the tune of $47 million per year for one player. I'm sorry. I do not see it.
And the funny part is, the more I think about this, because we always talk about sports, oh, that's a crazy contract. And usually the crazy contracts don't look crazy in a year or two. They probably could have had Bogarts, Devers, and Betts for a little bit north of $600 million, something like that, right? If they had been aggressive and gone at them early and not, you know, beat around the bush and played games and then screwed around with the second contract with Bogarts and all that stuff. And now we're desirous of them spending $600 million on one player instead of the three homegrown talents they could have had.
Yeah, and that's where we are. 617-779-7937. The Celtics with a win last night, back on track, or are they? We've been talking about that. We just mentioned the latest on Soto. We'll be talking with Tom E. Curran at the 4:30 mark, and we'll get to the Patriots here as there's some questions that still need to be answered about Drake May's biggest strengths and his biggest weaknesses. He talked about that a lot yesterday. We'll dive into that and talk to Tom E. Curran next.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.